Hello, everybody, and welcome to Weekly Manga Recap. It's Cinco de Mayo. We're doing this show on Friday due to some scheduling stuff, but we're here. We're here to talk about Haikyuu. Chris, you're back from Spain.
I am. I also to address the elephant in the room, to the fact that if you're watching... it's over there. It's being very loud. I shouldn't actually make that noise. If you're watching the video version of this, you'll notice that you aren't getting my camera. You'll just gain a very attractive static look at my face on a picture form. And that's because right now I'm not in the terribly best state to be showing my face. I'm going to be constantly coughing and things like that because I'm very, very sick. And it's not a great situation.
Cool. I'm like mostly in the shadows right now anyway. You can barely make me out.
To you it kind of works. You, it looks like I'm about to duel you in like a Yu-Gi-Oh match. Like you have a Millennium item and you're trying to steal my soul.
I need to get the light to reflect properly off my glasses so I can do this.
This is honestly a real shame because I had an entire plan on how I was going to start this episode. Because as you said, I spent the last week in Spain. So I was going to... Uh-huh. Oh, he's just leaving. Okay. I was gonna start this episode with like a French scarf around my neck and like my like a douchey cup of coffee and a very bad.
I have become super European.
I've been along with my peers now, and you can't understand it. But unfortunately, that joke has to die. I do want to tell a very quick story.
You can't kiss me, Fetty. Oh no!
I do want to tell a very quick story that related to Spain. So I tweeted about this. The first place that we went to during our stay was to Madrid. And we were very close by, like a block away from our Airbnb in Madrid, from an Irish pub. Obviously, it's about as Irish of a pub as one in America would be, since it's Spain. But it was still like, oh, let's go check that. So I've mentioned before on the show that my drink of choice is the Irish Car Bomb. So I went in there, and me and my brother tried to get Irish Car Bombs. And they have no idea what we're talking about. Like, we don't speak Spanish very well. My brother does a little bit better than I do, but still... It's not.
You're like un car bomb Irish.
Yeah, like Irish car bomb. We keep like doing the mimicking motion of like dropping something in a glass, like car bomb, un car bomb, un car bomb de Irish,
un bomb de coche Irish.
So what we get out of that is they just gave us a double shot of Jameson and a full pint of Guinness. We're like, it's not even close. But whatever, we'll just give up on that. The next night, we go there with our dad, and our dad is relatively fluent in Spanish. Not perfect, but he's spoken the language for years and has done a lot of things overseas in Spanish-speaking country. So he's able to go along with us and try to start explaining what an Irish car bomb is to the waiter, or the bartender, rather. And the bartender, as my dad's explaining to it, is just giving the most curious expression the entire time. He can't comprehend this. Cause we thought like, he's like, every step of the process, my dad would say, it'd be like, K, as he's like holding up a glass, like, K, car bomb. I guess what we did assume, like, I thought maybe the difficulty is, oh, maybe it goes by something else over there. I think we just didn't understand that in Spain, they just don't do bombs. They don't have like a drink where you drop a shot into something.
You drop something into it, yeah.
And you drink. So through trial and tribulation, we finally got them to make two Irish car bombs.
And it was like the worst Irish car bomb you've ever had.
It wasn't amazing. I'm not going to lie. It wasn't amazing. But, you know, I felt bad because this guy, you know, he was being very nice about it. You know, I do have to comment.
Yeah, a lot of patience in order to listen to your weird request. Sure.
Yeah. So I was like, you know what? And I've already done at this point an Irish car bomb, a beer. And then my brother was like, oh, they have Larios gin here. Cause part of the reason we went over to Spain is cause that's where our family's from. There's a gin named after us. There's a street. There's a statue named after us.
You posted the statue. Yeah.
So there's a lot of cool stuff there. So my brother was like, this is our first shot. Like, let's have Larios gin. So I was like, all right, gin and tonic. I really haven't eaten a whole lot today. This is a lot of booze to put on me very quickly, but all right, fine. So excuse me. I go and do all that. And I'm getting pretty drunk, and that guilt just came upon me that I was like, I made this guy do this, so I have to apologize. So I came in with my really shitty Spanish, and I'm like, lo siento, mi español es no bueno, pero un car bomb is muy popular among... estudiantes de universities and as special for mi familia. So gracias, gracias. And then I gave him like a
At least most of those English words are cognate, so he probably understood most of that.
I gave as much. Mr. Morales would have been so proud that I managed to put together some butcher shit Santa sentence like that.
She's like, oh, when you went on about Sacapuntas, I was, I had no hope.
I was so worried you'd have no idea what you were talking about.
I've got a little story too. It's not quite as much of an adventure as you. But people who listened to / watched the episode last week, which if you didn't know, would have, seen that, of course, Chris was not on the show because he was away and we had, Teching 101 on, in his place. Teching did a great job. It was great to have him on. And I'm sure that we'll not wait 8 months this time before having him on again. But, in the middle of the show, I got a phone call and, I was like, okay, this, just in case this is something related to work, I've got to listen to this because it was a number I didn't recognize, but it was a local number. So like maybe it's one of my coworkers calling or something. So in the middle of the show, I took my headphones off and muted my microphone and listened to it. And it was this weird, creepy guy who was inviting me to spend some time with some hot ladies. And what? I was like, is this guy trying to get me to come to a swinger party with him or something like that? And so, you know, Teching, I said that in the middle of the show, and he was like, that's ridiculous. I think you should go do it or something like that. Afterwards, I looked up the phone number. Turns out the guy was calling from a local escort service.
That's
dude
like...
was just making random cold calls to try and get business rounded up at his escort business.
I really had to doubt the quality of this escort service if their strategy is to cold call people to get new business.
First off, that you've got a cold call. Second off, that you've got like the creepiest guy available going, hey, got some, nice girls here. Want to spend some time with you. You should come hang out over in Tampa. Yeah. Like, first off, you don't have a recording. The guy you have doing it is just like,
you should come over and, you don't get any STDs or anything. No, no, that's fine. Can I watch while you're doing it? Hey, like, there, fella. Do you like black chicks? How about Asian chicks? That's all I have, so I hope you like one or the other.
I would have some nice Latin girls, but, be practiced with them. They don't speak English too good.
This, like, the weirdest fucking, like, cheapest thing you could, like, if you,
hey,
like,
even do you have a car? Like, 'cause they need you to pick them up. You better have
first
a car.
Off, the fact, first off, the fact that you're trying to get someone to go to an escort service in Tampa.
I was like, well, isn't like the thing with escort services is that they don't need to cold call people because they attract a clientele themselves by their nature. If you are able to afford, if you have the disposable income to pay for women, to attractive women to follow you around to places, you don't need to cold call people to get that business.
The only reason you should have advertisements at all is like, you know, you should have them, you know, like, posted up on, you know, banners on CD websites, or you also might, have like a special attraction going on. Like, I don't know, some porn star is doing work for you or something like that. There is no reason that you should have one-eyed Pete over in the car, but, oh, yeah, you should come in. Stop whatever you're doing. Come here.
I hope that there was, like, legitimately, like, a conversation in the office about, like, hey, which person should do the cold calls? And they're like, well, we got Casey Kasem's son over there. And he's like, hey, everybody. They're like, we also have Herbert, the pedophile for Family Guy. Like, hey there, everybody. Nick, you should call down here. All the ladies want you down here.
You should let him down your wall right now. Yeah, you do that.
You fucking bitch. I'm like, hey.
You're saying that to the wrong people here. Isn't the perfect segue to talking about volleyball?
Yeah. I'm excited for this episode, Nick. Because
yeah, thank you.
in between berating Spanish bartenders until I got my fancy drink made and presumably getting horrifically sick over there, I managed to catch up and read through all of Haikyuu that's available currently in the English collected volumes. And I'm super stoked to talk about it because if you've been following the Weekly Manga Recap Twitter account, I've made it no secret that I greatly enjoy this series. I've been posting various screenshots and things like that.
So there's no reason to listen to this episode. You already know how that we like it. So
yeah, I'm like, it's good. Credits. Bye, everybody. Catch you next time. Sit, boo-boo. Sit. Good dog.
I'm fucking sick of that dog. It's literally like the freaking first day I'm back here, and all of a sudden, Jesus Christ. Anyway, we had both checked out Haikyuu quite a long time ago.
There was a period of time that I used to recap on the show,
So yeah, it shouldn't really be a surprise that, you know, oh, we said we're going to cover this show. We both do like it. But I had definitely forgotten about a lot of what happened because I hadn't actually gotten past like the first two or three volumes, when I stopped the first time. This time I read basically all of it. And, I was like, oh yeah, man. Really love the way that this starts. I love the interaction between the characters. Love the way that, they come together as a team. They're constantly learning from each other and encouraging each other. There are, you know, these minor characters that are doing all this stuff. And it's like, okay, yeah, really proper, good team sports manga. And I was thinking also as we were getting ready for this, it's like, you know, in about 4 months, we're going to have to cover Prince of Tennis. And this is, like, good prep for that. Because, like, okay, you can have a series that is popular for all the reasons that Haikyuu is popular, which is that girls love it. And why shouldn't they love it? It's about the very close relationships between these young guys who get along with each other and come to know each other and come together. And they wear polo shirts, and gym shorts, and they get really sweaty. So that's why girls like it. Because they have lots of boys that they can love in it. Prince of Tennis is popular for all the same reasons, and it's terrible. So I just want to point out this stuff. I was like, I've concluded now that it's like, it's not a matter of this series isn't for me. It's no, I could get into a series like this, and here's how I might love it. And this one I don't. So it's really going to help me bolster my arguments when we get to Sadistic September this year.
Yeah. So I guess we should start off by basically describing what this series is. The easiest way to sort of describe it is, Nick's going to go kill a dog, I believe, is that this is a shonen sports series about men's indoor volleyball. Which, if you don't know what that sport is, I mean, you know what volleyball is, but you maybe don't know why I mentioned men's indoor volleyball. It's the six person per side of the net kind of game. So it's not like beach volleyball, which is a lot more about the actual quote unquote volley of it. This is a lot more about kind of the interaction that happens between the people trying to spike the ball and the blockers on the other side of the net. Like that plays a much bigger part into the game.
There's more specialization between the players.
Yes.
Especially because, you know, it's, also another big difference between it and beach volleyball is that beach volleyball has considerably fewer players on each side at a time. Indoor volleyball has got six people a side. It's a very, very good number. Uh-huh. It's a great number of characters to have working at the same time. Because it's enough, and it's, not too many. Even as much as I love Aishou 21, you have to admit that it would not work if it were like a full, you know, like everyone gets the same amount of focus type of series. There's too many characters on that team for everyone to get focus all the time. Everyone's got their own little moment in the spotlight every now and again, but you can't have more than, you know, Hiruma gets a story, Monty gets a story, and Senna gets a story every single game. You can have like one more character have something going on in each game, and that's it. There's not enough room for anything else to happen. Six players aside, much easier to do that.
Yeah, especially because they usually blend those characters in and out. But I guess the main thing to kind of mention is that there's a sort of, it's not a twist to the story, but the first chapter of this series presents a twist in its own premise.
It does.
Because we follow, the story is about Hinata, who is our main character in this story.
Naruto's wife.
Yes, he is.
That was so hard for me to get over the first time.
He's a short player. He's, I think, 5'4", which is very, very short, even by Japanese standards, even by, you know, teenager standards, to be playing in the world of volleyball. But he is drawn to it because there was a player he saw on TV who played for the Karasuno Crows, who was short like he was, but could jump so high, and everyone called him the little giant. He was like the star of the team. So Hinata's wanted to play volleyball because of that. And at this point, I think he's in middle school, so he's even a little shorter. He decides he's going to go into it. He does all this work to kind of get a team together. He basically begs a couple of his friends who are on other teams that once their seasons are done, they help with him. And it all goes to the fact he's never actually been able to play a real game, but he enters into a tournament, gets to play in his own game for the first time with, like, himself, two guys who aren't even really members of the team, and then three first years. And he, in his first match, goes up against the team led by Kageyama, who is this not self-proclaimed, but he is called the king of the court. He's this expert setter, and he loses in this first match against Kageyama.
It's that one here, it's that arrogant character that was just introduced in Black Clover. I am the king of the court!
Exactly. And
with his creepy mustache.
And he crushes...
nothing like that.
Yeah, he Kageyama's team crushes Hinata's team, and it's a tournament, so that means they're out. And all of Hinata's middle school career, it's the only volleyball game he ever got to play, and he lost already. So he basically makes a promise then. He's like, I'm going to, like, Kageyama, you are now my rival. I'm going to beat you one day. We are going to be fated opponents for all of time.
And I'll be the last one standing at the court, because that's the big thing for him is that, you know, when you lose, you're done. You don't get to play anymore. And he doesn't care so much about winning for the sake of it as he wants to win so he can keep on playing volleyball. Mm-hmm. So he's like, I'll be the last one standing on the court, and I'll dethrone you, king.
And, you know, we time skip ahead to once he's joined his high school team. He's gone to Karasuno. He meets the rest of the Karasuno Crows. And they're like, oh, hey, yeah, there's one other middle school player just joined the team. He's inside there. Hinata's like, so excited to meet his new teammate, goes inside, and it's Kageyama. Instead of being fated rivals for all time, they're now actually teammates on the same team in school. And it's a unique twist to present this idea of, like, the one-on-one kind of rivalry and then be like, nope, now they're going to have to be teammates. It's a fun twist that kind of becomes part of the premise of the entire series is the unique relationship these two share.
Yeah, think of all those famous rivalries in sports manga, like, you know, imagine if Shin had kicked Senna's ass in Aisha 21, and then the time skip, and suddenly they're teammates. It's like, Well, we can't have any more confrontations now, I guess. We could have practices against each other, but that's it.
But it works in this series, because it becomes sort of their thing. Because Hinata is so short, he really only has a few things at his, you know, benefit to make him a good player. He doesn't have experience in game. He didn't get to play any games except for that one. But he's very fast, he's very agile, he can jump very high, and he has a lot of energy to him. And basically,
he's got a lot of stamina, he's this very wild, kind of character.
Yeah, and Kageyama's skill is being this expert setter who is basically a prodigy. He's incredibly talented. Mm-hmm. And the whole thing is that Kageyama realizes what he can get out of Hinata. He can take advantage of all the speed and skill that, or all the speed and natural agility that Hinata has and make up for his shortcomings in skill by basically being the one that puts the ball everywhere it needs to be for him. And together they basically form this insanely talented, single spike, this god mode quick that everyone likes to call it, or freak quick, that basically becomes like the new, like, ace in the hole kind of offensive strategy for Karasuno going forward. And it becomes part of the basis of how that kind of develops and that grows as the series goes along, because, you know, right now it has 11 volumes out in the English version. I know the series has been going a lot longer in Japan, but it's been catching up pretty
quickly. They're coming out pretty rapidly in order to catch up right now. I think they're going for like one volume a month.
I was going to say, yeah, because
currently
I had 10 volumes going into Spain. I'd made a mention to you like, yeah, I got through all 10 volumes. You're like, I think 11 comes out tomorrow. I was like, oh, shit. All right. I'll pick that up and read it in a day then. But in that time, the characters, 11 volumes, that's a lot of volumes. But even then, it's still a tremendous amount of character growth that has happened throughout the entire cast at this point, basically every named character on the team who's considered like a major, like a starter, I guess, has had their own arc at least partially told within the story together at this point.
Well, even some backups have had some really important character development on the team. There's a guy named Suga, Sugawaras, and he was the main setter for the team before Kageyama came along. And so when the coach of the team is considering, he's like, okay, Sugawaras is a third year. And, you know, when I was a player in high school, I got to play in like one game. I barely got to contribute. It really, really sucks to want to be able to contribute to the team and then to not have to. And he's a third year. This is his last chance to get to play in high school. So I don't really know what I should do. Should I go with the guy who I know is probably better in Kageyama, or should I give this guy a chance to play? And Suga comes up to him and he's like, you should let Kageyama do it because he gives our team the best chance to win. I will do my best in order to be able to contribute someday. But until then, give us the best chance to win. Give me the most possible opportunities to play in the future by having him actually win those games so we can keep on going. And he just keeps on working at it. He goes over to Hinata and he's like, Hey, you and Kageyama have got this great tandem, this great symbiotic relationship going on. I can't have that with you, but I can work with you so that if together, then I want us to be able to play well. So let's work on this system of signs that we want to do. And I'll work on being able to, you know, put the ball in play for you and everything like that. So we should be the best that we can be. And it's just, he doesn't end up even playing in the next several matches anyway, but he's like, hey, I'm just going to do what I can. And it's a really great moment for him. And then right after that, who's on the bench, I don't even remember the guy's name, but he goes to a player that they've practiced with recently. And he's like, hey, you use this really awesome jumping gentle serve in the match against us. Can you show me how to do that? Because I want to have some sort of weapon I can use with the team. It's, you know, just this great group effort where everyone's trying to contribute, and really, it's just a really nice feeling game to see them all trying to come together like that.
What I could say the best thing about this series is it absolutely gets the notion of a sports series and what drives you to be competitive at sports and is entertained about that, because almost every step of the way, it captures that idea of what passion kind of drives you forward. And I've mentioned this before, when we've talked about other sports series, when it encapsulates that moment that makes you realize why this sport is so exciting. This, I think, is a series I'd almost kind of go to when I mentioned that, because there's a very early on scene where Hinata leaps up and he sees the view of the entire court before him. And it looks so like majestic when he's describing, like, this is what the view looks like from the top. And you're like, yeah, from that shot alone, I get why someone would want to play this sport. Like, to be able to jump that high, or someone this small would be able to see over all that and just have this wide expanse before you. Like, I can get into that. And then, as you mentioned, all these characters who see things, with Sugawara saying, you know, keep Kageyama in because he's going to give us the opportunity to play more games, which is going to give me more chances to get out onto the field. And there's, you know, I don't want to spoil anything in the series, but there's plenty of situations where characters have to start having even questioned, why do you play this game? You know, what is it about this that's going to make this fun for you? Like, you know, someone has to ask, like, why care about putting passion into this? Because in the end, you're probably just going to lose anyway. Like, these are all questions that are kind of posed out there, but answers them in one way that is also very exciting for the sport. But the other hand is also kind of mature in its own way. There's like sort of like a quiet notion in the background. A lot of these characters realize that this is a very brief amount of time that they're going to have to play this sport, and they're just trying to get as much out of it as they can before they move on.
It's very much the, you know, the springtime of youth kind of thing that Japan loves so much. And you do see that in a lot of sports manga, where there's this notion of, we are probably not going to end up doing this professionally or in college or anything like that. So we've got this club activity and we want to get the most out of it that we possibly can before we have to go off and become adults, basically. Mm. And that really comes home when you see people lose and they realize they can't do it anymore. that, interestingly enough, it's actually a character at the school who has to do it. Just this minor character that Daichi, I think his name is.
Yeah, Daichi is the team captain.
So he's friends with the captain of the women's volleyball team at the school, and they don't have nearly as many good players and stuff, and so they end up losing in the first round of the tournament that they're involved in. And, you know, Oliver, there's this, you know, younger teammate who she's like, I'm sorry, I wasn't good, I couldn't do it. And she's like, oh, hey, you know, just pick yourself back up, you did your best, it's fine. You know, we gotta go line up, we gotta do this. And, she ends up getting called away. And, they're like, oh man, she's so strong, you know, and it's that, you know, Mamori and Hiruma moment where, you know, one of the other teammates is like, hey, you know, the captain can't, you know, show a sorrowful face in front of her team, but when she's by herself, she's going to let it all out. And sure enough, she's holding her jersey up in front of her face and crying into it because it's all over for her. And it just captures that sense of pain and lost, you know, she's never going to get the chance to do this thing that she loves basically ever again.
There's, there's a tournament that starts off, and this is where that scene takes place in. And in the volume, it mentions that, there's a particular chapter, it's chapter 40 called Winners and Losers. They mentioned at the start of it that in the collected volume, they added more pages into it that were kind of trimmed out from the original chapter. And it's essentially that chapter where their team loses, the girls' team loses. And I think it's like, I don't remember how many teams are in the men's side of the tournament. It must be around like probably like 64 or so. And there's essentially like two straight pages showing all the various one-note teams who you're never going to see again. They're not important, but they lost. And it's this whole thing to show how no matter how, like, everyone's here for the same reason, to be on the court as long as they can. And it's this thing where they're like, look, even if it was for a short while, we were here too. And it shows every team that was just eliminated in the first round and their jerseys and their reactions to this and how they're all still trying to stand proud despite the fact that they lost. Like, that is absurdly awesome. I've never seen a sports series put that much time and effort into showcasing how even these characters are only here because you need a 64-round tournament to put enough matches in for dramatic tension to be like, no, every single one of these teams actually really mattered, you know, in their own, in this fictional world. They were all here for the same reason. It's like, you know, that's incredible. That's something I, like, Ice Shield didn't even do that. I mean,
Ice
Shield had that scene with,
they had a montage of all the teams losing and then a bunch of players going, oh.
But this really hit me like hard. I was like, damn, that is extremely well done to like just put that much time and effort into being like the first round losers. And here are all of them to give you a moment. Just be like, you know, they were here too. It's really well done and really well written kind of series in that regard.
And, and aside from just the basic, like, character moments and, I mean, the volleyball scenes are cool. Mm-hmm. They're of capturing just the amazing, you know, the last second save that, was it Nagayama? Nishinoya.
Nishinoya.
The last second saves that he can do. He's their libero. He's essentially like their goalkeeper, kind of. And, the way that he gets underneath the ball at the last second, at one point he twists his leg around in order to like kick the ball back up into the air, when I first saw that, I was like, is that illegal? And I had to look at it. I was like, huh, I didn't know you could do that in volleyball.
Yeah, I definitely saw that. I was like, is that illegal? But I guess so.
Yeah, I looked at it. I was like, apparently any part of your body you can actually hit the ball with in volleyball. I guess it's just really difficult to control it with your foot, and you know, you got to hit it upwards, so almost nobody does it.
Well, you're only allowed to touch the ball for a split second. So I guess trying to use your foot, you don't have as much control over just bouncing something with your foot, really. So probably just isn't done very often.
But, you know, he just does this twist his leg around and knocks the ball up into the air to save it. So many of the spikes are done this way that it looks really cool. One of the big things is, you know, spiker versus blocker, going these two guys jumping up on either side of the net, and one's trying to get it through the other, the guardians on the other side. A bunch of times where he just goes flying through the air in this awesome pose. My favorite parts is there's a relatively early match where he's just preparing to jump, and he's, you know, kind of like twisting his body down in order to get a good spring up, and he swings his arms behind him, and he's like a bird that's about to take flight. It's just this really well done kind of perspective shot, because you see his arms stretching out towards you as he's getting ready to jump. Art really just complements those moments. It's awesome.
It's also something that I really like about it. Part of, I think, the fun of Aisha 21 was how they were a team truly of misfits. How it was, you know, a bunch of people who never played the sport before, were considered losers in their many ways, and that kind of played to the whole, like, I don't know, perception of their team as the Devil Blats. This one kind of has it as well, in that Karasuno was once an extremely talented team that used to constantly make it in, like, far into tournaments and once played at Nationals, but has since fallen out of favor. Now they're called, like, the Clipwing Crows or the various different elements.
The Fallen Champions.
And they play into that here as they build into this idea that they're, like, the resurgent crows taking flight, and that their ultimate rivals are the cats, the Nekoma cats, who are basically play from the opposite side of the country, and how they've always wanted to. This is essentially the Christmas Bowl they've been trying to do, but, like, with the idea of an actual opponent they want
together.
To. Yeah, like, both sides need to make it to the end to get there, and never has it happened before. And it's called, like, the alleyway fight or the dumpster fight. I forget the exact term that they use for it. And it's...
We're going to be the kings of the trash heap.
Yeah, but it's very cool with the way they actually kind of phrase that, where you do see it at points when, like, the big tournaments come up, when, you know, every other school kind of has, like, these big banners held out and everyone's super excited about it. And, you know, Karasuno, when, like, a video montage goes about explaining all the teams that won at the tournament, they're, like, a asterisk mention at the end of it. They're like, yeah, so going up against Blue Castle tomorrow was a team that was surprisingly effective against Date. Or it's like, wow, really? That's all they got? But it just plays this idea that they're not considered a top team, and they're kind of building that perception back up. It's a lot of very cool elements to it, and I really do love how this series just manages to make the sport of volleyball seem just so absolutely majestic at times. Because every position has its way of being described. There's a point, because Kageyama is the secondary lead character in this, and he's a setter. And the idea of a setter is it's usually the person who touches the ball second during a team, because they're the one you touch, you know, if you don't know the rules of volleyball, when a ball goes over onto your side, you have three touches for it, and then you have to knock it to the other side on that third touch. So ideally, you receive the ball with one touch, then you send it to the setter, who will then put it up to be the best possible hit for the third person to knock it across with. So people have noted, like, wasn't that kind of sad? Because as a setter, you normally aren't going to be hitting the ball. And he's like, no, actually, I love it, because it means that I have the ability to set the ball up wherever I want it. I'm in control of that. Like, they find ways to make every position...
I'm the mastermind.
Yeah, every position sound just absolutely absurd and awesome. It's so effective at what it does.
It's a really great way, because they really do try and push this point. It's like... No, all of them are, like, the best position to have on the court. You've got, then, Nishinoya, who is the libero. He's this guy who's even shorter than Hinata is. He's a purely defensive player. All he does is he's the guy who makes those impossible-to-save saves, knocks the ball up, and gives the team the chance to do it. And he's like, you know, with me here, there means there's no way we can lose because no one can score points on us. That's why my position is so awesome. And then you've got the spikers... the position just speaks for itself, where they go up and they smash the ball into the opponent's lane, and then you've got the setters, and you've got the you know, these people who take pride in their serves. Mm-hmm. All these different elements. It's that thing that I should do, is these are all the different ways you can contribute to this game and why all of them are so awesome. Everyone, every time that you make a sports manga, you should be able to do that. Like, have the most innocent-looking thing that is an important element of the game be like it's the coolest thing ever. That's why Aisha 21 was like, kickers are awesome!
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the idea of just trying to make it feel like every position on the team feels as cool as it does. One of the greatest moments in the series for me is there's a very important kind of arc built around Nishinoya and Asahi. Who is the team's quote-unquote ace. He's essentially their tallest, strongest player. He's another third year and is the team's ace just because he's the most effective attacker at that time. But there's a whole sort of drama that's put in behind him. That the last time Asahi basically went to play in a match, he just got stuffed by the opposing team's blockers. They just constantly stuffed him at every turn. He didn't manage to score any points and just demoralized him. And it is this great moment that's kind of built up between him because Nishinoya and him have this sort of relationship. He's like, look, keep attacking time and time again, because I will keep catching the ball and making sure it's, I'm going to knock it back up into the air. I'm small. I can't do what you can. So I'll keep the ball up into the air and you bring it down from up above. I want to see you fly. And it's like, it's just this great sort of idea of the trust and, you know, effort that these, it's that Shonen Jump mantra of what, like friendship, victory, effort. Like it's all of that attitude kind of boiled down and just kind of put to the perfect kind of perfection of when it's, you know, put out in the right way. Everything in this manga just feels so fun and exciting when you get the sports part of it.
And I mean, it's everything about the series that I think works. It also comes perfectly boiled down to just the main two characters with Hinata and Kageyama, because Kageyama's got this past thing where he was called the king of the court because he was an asshole to all of his teammates. He was a dictator. He would say, like, you're not playing well enough. You've got to move faster. You've got to jump higher. You've got to hit the ball hard. You've got to receive my passes where I'm putting them, because that's the only way we can win. And then eventually it was like, you're an asshole. We're not going to work with you. And of course he was completely, you know, crippled. You can't play volleyball by yourself. It absolutely does not work, because if, you know, you're either going to set up for someone who's not there, or you're going to need someone to set you up and they're not going to do it for you. If there's no cooperation, then you cannot win. Was a big thing that happened in his past where he learned, you know, I can't do this anymore. And so he decided that he needed to make a change. And so he's still quite a bit of a jerk, but he understands what is essential. And so the first 5 or 6 chapters are all about building up the relationship between he and Hinata and showing you how they develop this amazing rapport, where Kageyama learns how to bring the best out of Hinata and how they can be each other's greatest weapons. And he goes from insulting Hinata to being the guy who understands him the best pretty quickly. There's a great moment in a practice match where Hinata is thinking to himself, I'm like the decoy of the team. That's what everyone's like praising for, is that I run around and I jump high into the air and all that stuff. So I'm just there to kind of free up all these other guys. I'm not super tall and strong like Asahi, but I said I was going to be the ace, but tools that he does, what can I do? And so Kageyama is like, hey, let's do our awesome, you know, quick spike again. And they do it. He's like, see, this is what you're good at. You move around, you can do all this. Just launches into this huge rant about how great Hinata is, what he does to contribute to the team. And he's just shouting at him. I was like, this is why you're great. This is why we need you. This is why you shouldn't be hard on yourself. Do you get it?
There's a lot to... After that. There's a lot that I really love about the way that this series kind of approaches its character development. One of the big things is that everything does feel earned. You mentioned that that's like the first 5 or 6 chapters. It'd be so much of a shame if they kind of dissolved this idea that Kageyama has a lot of issues with his own arrogance and his own talent, and they just fix that essentially by then. But 11 volumes in, he hasn't even completely yet removed all of it. There's still some small elements where he still thinks he might know better than some of his teammates, and he's had to get, like, there's steps. It's a bit of progression of him learning, like, essentially to trust his teammates more and more. There's a very pivotal moment where they realize that their special tech isn't working anymore. So Kageyama thinks he knows a way to fix it. And it's not until basically the main setter rival that he has, Okaiwa, kind of has to give him, like, an explanation of, like, are you really understanding what he thinks? Are you doing that? They realize, like, oh, maybe I'm still being an asshole again. And that's the same for everybody. Like, every moment in this, characters kind of realize their own faults over time. One character who I really love the story of is Tsukishima. He's another first-year player. He's this very tall guy. He's the biggest asshole on the team. He's a complete shithead. He's such a... He's such an asshole. He's
a tremendous jerk to Kageyama when they first meet. He's like, I heard that your team didn't like you, King. And just keeps on doing it. Just keeps on freaking poking the bear for no fucking reason. This guy's done nothing to him specifically.
Yeah, and it takes about 10 volumes before they actually start to deal with what this guy's real issue is. They touch upon it a little bit beforehand. There's a moment, particularly in the match with Blue Castle, which is a fantastic match. They're like a legitimate tournament match where part of it is Kageyama basically having to win the team back. And a big part of that is, can you get the most out of Tsukishima, the one player who you don't have a good relationship with at all? And that becomes like a big aspect in that match, is like, you know, Kageyama trying to actually get a legitimate, you know, great attack out of Tsukishima and learning what Tsukishima wants, essentially. And it's just excellent the way all this is done. And Kageyama's become one of my favorite characters because he breaks a couple stereotypes in his own trope. The biggest switch being that he, you know, he's such a smart player. He knows he has all this talent, and he's just as much of an idiot as Hinata is.
It's so great because during matches Kageyama, you know, has more play experience and he's got more just technical know-how for how volleyball works. So he does seem at times like he's far wiser than Hinata, but it's like exclusively in volleyball or like exclusively in practice. He's also got this kind of rivalry that still exists with Hinata, where they've apparently got this thing going where each of them's trying to be like the first person to school so that they can practice the earliest. So they like fucking race each other. It's like, you're going to the same place to do the same thing, you stupid kid.
I love that, like, because Hinata, you kind of get the sense early on he's a bit of a dim kid. And they sort of describe that as in when he's trying to explain why volleyball is cool to people, he's like, you go like, whoosh, and you go, wah! And then there's a point where Kageyama's trying to explain something to him, and Kageyama does the same thing. He's like, and it's like, shwam, but you gotta be like, hurrah! And they're like, wait, you're an idiot.
And Hinata's like, oh, I get it!
They're like, oh god, you're both idiots.
And, there's also one where, like, he's trying to show him how he can be a good blocker. And so he's like, you gotta put your hands like this! Like this! Like this! Are you paying attention to me? You have to do them like this!
Yeah, like, you can't technically describe it at all. It's just great. Like, there's a lot of great humor in this series, too. So many of the characters have fun jokes to them. Asahi is probably the best character, because he's this very tall guy, and he looks older than he probably should. And
yeah, he's got a little bit of a goatee going, so he looks like he's like 20 or something. Yeah.
So everyone just assumes he's this tall adult and he's intimidating, and he just happens to be the biggest bitch on the team who's unintentionally terrifying.
People will literally say like, oh wow, I've heard that he's this delinquent who's been held back like 2 years, so no wonder he's so good. Like, I'm not!
And he's over there crying because someone like a mile away said like, oh, I think something smells over here. He's like, is it me? Oh. And everyone, like, and all the second year players just treat him like shit. Anyone who knows him long enough's just like, shut the fuck up, Bossy! Get on the goddamn line! He's like, okay.
I love Tanaka, personally.
Tanaka's great.
He's this second-year player who's got, like, a shaved head, and he's kind of got this tough guy attitude, but at the same time, enjoys being a senpai to them. Like, you know, he'll do, like, a small favor for Hinata, and they're like, oh, thanks, yeah, thanks for letting us practice. He's like, ah, ha, ha, yes, thank me more. Oh, thank you so much. Now call me senpai. Oh, thank you, senpai. Ah, ha, ha, ha.
Yeah, the second years have that too, because that's the big way Hinata warms up to, or Nishidia gets him warmed up to him. Yeah. He calls him senpai. He's like,
he would also like to be called senpai. You should use that on him. Oh, I fucking love Nishinoya's introduction, because he does this completely pointless receive, which he calls like the rolling thunder return. Like, he does like a combat roll and then sticks his hand under a receive a ball, and everyone's like, what a fucking completely pointless combat roll he just did. Except for Hinata, who's like, teach me how to do that!
And it's something you actually brought up too. We mentioned how a lot of players have their own sort of specialties. And that's something that they actually mentioned as being Tanaka's, is that while he is a great spiker, his biggest asset is basically not being able to be phased very hard. That he always is high energy essentially at all times. So there's a point where there's...
just gets pumped up and goes after it, yeah.
Well, there's someone who's deliberately going after him, attacking at him over and over again to demoralize him, because they're like, once you kill him, their entire morale will drop, and that will be the end of them. And no matter how many times he costs some points or he puts out a bad receive, he still keeps being excited, then manages to score off it, and is pumped up all over again to like, holy shit, this dude's energy's for real. Like, this guy could be an amazing player. And it's great to see that that's legitimately like a part that some, like the non-even like active, like, you know, the non-physical parts of these characters are actually part of the reason they're so good at these.
Yeah. There's also a moment like in their first tournament match, that they have in the series where, they, you know, first point, and so Tanaka and Nishinoya are celebrating, like, yeah, we did it! Yeah, yeah, let's keep this going! And the captain's like, all right, yeah, come on, guys, let's get back. No! Just, like, shouting. The ref is like, hey, stop it! We're going to penalize you. They're just such fucking hot-headed jocks.
I love it, though. But that's what's kind of so fun and exciting about this series, is that it's a very fun series to read. You can tell it has a lot of passion to volleyball, and it's infectious in that way. I mean, you don't have to, I think, really care about volleyball to be able to read this and have absolute fun with it, because there's just so much of the characters enjoying themselves and the great stories that are told. If you can enjoy any kind of narrative told within sports, you're able to see it and enjoy it here. I think one of the only few I haven't seen as of yet, they haven't really done much of like an injury storyline, but everything else of the idea of your own inevitable replacement being in there. Like, the seeds have been planted for that incredible story to be told over time. The story of, like, you know, trying to pull ahead against somebody who's just much more talented than you. The rivalries that have kind of built up within the team and without of the team. And I mentioned it before, but there's a match between Blue Castle, Bohai Josai, I think is the Japanese name. It's basically phrased as Blue Castle in the translation. And Karasunohap is an amazing match. It is a fantastic match that goes alongside, like, some of the best matches I've read, and even Ice Shield 21. Like, it's such an exciting match that comes right down to, like, you know, I can't say the wire because, unfortunately, volleyball is one of those sports that, like, one action can't decide a match.
That's something that I really fucking appreciate about this series, is that they make no goddamn illusions about the way that volleyball fucking works.
Yeah.
Volleyball. There's no time limits. The way it works is you do 2 out of 3 sets, and each set goes until one team scores 25 points. If both teams have scored a lot, then you keep on going until one team wins by 2 points. So even if you are down literally 24 to nothing, it is possible for you to come back and win. And they mentioned that early on in the tournament. They're like, hey, we're down, but we're not out of this. We're not working against the clock or anything. We can still come back and win this as long as we don't give up and we go after every single one. And, it's something that they actually kind of that an opponent praises Karasuno for, is because they take a point back from Karasuno when Karasuno's winning heavily, and they're like, oh, we've got to do this. We're not going to let them score any more points. They never let up, and they constantly maintain that enthusiasm, that dedication to winning, because they don't want to slip up, because they want to be they want to stay in the court as long as they can. They don't want to, what is it the coach says, like, don't focus too much on the opponent above you or else you'll get tripped up from beneath or something like that. And so they don't make any illusions about the way that it works, which is a fucking, like, it was like tennis and Prince of Tennis because of that. It was like, oh, he's so far behind. How is he going to come back? It's like, well, it's tennis, so he could. So, because tennis is scored not the same way, but it also has no time limit. It goes until one person scores a certain amount. So,
yeah, and it's also that same idea of, like, if you get to deuces, and it's like you have to keep going. It's not like 1 point will decide it. You have to get advantage and then score from there. I love so much of what the series does. I love the way it's motivational. I mentioned, I put that in another tweet, but there's a particular line from the series I still use as, like, a mantra where they're talking about how, like, the walls that come up against you when you're trying to score, how they're so big. And you're like, look, even if you smack into a wall, that just gives you the chance to climb over that wall. That just gives you a chance to conquer this new challenge that's suddenly come up before you. And it's like, that's a great fucking motivation to use if you're trying to, like, work out. You're like, oh, God, I'm gassing out. You're like, no, now I just overcome this now. I go Super
Hal
Saiyan.
Jordan.
Yeah. And I love it for that. I love it for the motivation these characters have. There's Oikawa is probably, I guess, probably the most developed non-member of the team that there is, when, like, another team's a member. And they give him a flashback that is, it's a little, like, a little exaggerated, but not an unbelievable way, because the entire story is basically he's a setter, and he was a setter on Kageyama's old team, like, when he was in middle school. So Kageyama, even then, was a talented kid, and it was basically Oikawa watching it, watching him be this player who was slowly starting to eclipse him, that was being so talented. And Oikawa was kind of just recognizing, like, I'm going to lose my spot to this kid. I'm going to lose my spot to this kid. And this moment comes in when Kageyama's like, oh, hey, can you teach me your special signature serve? And Oikawa just loses it and is about to attack the kid until someone, like, intervenes and stops him. And the moment you're like, it sounds almost a little ridiculous, like the idea of like, oh, I'm going to kill you over volleyball. But it's told in a way that you're like, no, like when your adrenaline is that high that you just, you're watching someone who's just going to come and take everything away from you. It portrays it all in a way that's very believable and adds a lot of depth to these characters, like how Aikawa's kind of grown and learned from that moment now, and how he's still aware that Kageyama is slowly eclipsing him, that he's not going to just let him take that spot from him, and how he's going to kind of, you know, keep trying to fight to be that step beyond no matter what. It's just great stuff. Every character in this series, I feel like, has a really well-told story, with the exception of Daichi. He's the only character that, to this point...
It was so weird.
hasn't really had a whole lot said about him. He's the captain of the team, and you get the idea that he's kind of like the most level-headed of everyone on here.
He's the rock, yeah.
Yeah. But at this point yet, we still haven't gotten too much about him. We don't even really know if he's great. Like, we know he's a very good defensive player.
He doesn't even have really a specialty. They make a deal that he's good at receiving. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, that becomes the big focus of what Nishinoya does. So that's emphasized a bit less. So he's kind of, I guess, a little bit of an all-rounder.
He is.
I guess you could say.
And I imagine we probably will know more about him because, again, I don't want to spoil too much, but I will note that essentially the sports series plot point of third years who are still in sports usually will have to leave that sport so they can then start to focus on their studies does come up, and they play into that a little bit. But I feel like there's going to be more to play into that later on as they start going into, like, the next tournament, and that maybe he'll get his focus in there. But even then, even though he hasn't had focus, he's still, like, an enjoyable character, just because he's sort of, like, the straight man in the group that manages mm-hmm. to, like,
yeah.
wheel in all these very stupid characters that he's surrounded by.
Let's see, I've got these two rookies who are fucking idiots, even though they're really good. I've got this ace who's a fucking crybaby. I've got Tanaka, who is going to punch somebody someday. I've got Nishinoya, who will not stop going on about how hot our manager is.
Oh, Kiyoka. Or Kiyoko.
She's great, too. She does practically nothing, but she plays off of the team so well because she's so ridiculously stoic. Like, they make a big thing where she is going to, like, she literally is like, I'm not really good at, like, giving words of encouragement or something, so I went and, like, found this. And she has found this old banner that they used to have, and she's cutting it all cleaned up and stuff. And so they hang it up, and it's like, you know, take flight, crows, or something like that. And they're like, oh, yeah, so great. And then the captain's like, no, I don't think she's done yet. And she's like, go get him.
Yeah.
Everyone starts crying. Third year's just crying so much that their tears are like floating out into the air.
Yeah, there's a ton of...
Just because she barely talks, and she's like really embarrassed that she said just that.
She is great. I actually am very glad, though, because, as you mentioned, she didn't do a whole lot to the series to that point, and she is a very stoic character, so there's not a lot to get out of her, that they do add another female character into it, essentially a first-year manager who's going to potentially take over once Kyoko has to leave. And the first year manager is like a very much more hyperactive character. But I also love that she's like paranoid and she just assumed someone was trying to kill her for a while. Like she was just like darting around being like, an assassin's coming after me.
At least she wasn't worried that everyone wanted to rape her.
No, this is not Air Gear.
I should say, like, how refreshing is it to have, you know, a group of young teenage boys forming a sports team that is referred to as a bunch of crows? That's really enjoyable.
Yeah, it's essentially, this is Air Gear if it wasn't told from, like, the most disgusting point of view. Although I do feel like John Omaha, a.k.a. Obama, taking over the body of one of the managers would make for a great new element to the series.
Now, listen.
Oh, God, can you imagine if that story was told now and it was Donald Trump who took over the young girl's body?
I know everything about volleyball. We're going to be the best volleyball team.
I've taken over this 15-year-old Japanese schoolgirl's body, but I feel like it's my body. I'm going to do what I want with it now. Anyway, let's go into Russia. Let's attack them.
You guys hate Russia, right? Everybody. Actually, I want to get along with Russia. Let's...
Yeah. What's going on? What's going on with Britain? Let's take those guys out now. Like, wait, what?
Who else can we pick on? Mexico.
You know what?
We're so far away from all those countries. They've got nothing to do with us. Oh, but you never know.
I want to take out Turkey. I don't like how they're called after food, but they don't make the food. Let's take those guys out.
Why do we have this short guy as our spiker? We would never let the ball over if we would just build a wall.
We want the tallest players. We want the tallest wall.
We want the best players.
We got the best, tallest players on this team.
Okay, I think we're done talking about IQ. We're going on to this. Very high recommendation. I'm very glad to have another sports manga to get into and to enjoy. Shonen Jump, it seems like they always have at least one really good sports manga going on. So, I'm always glad.
Yeah, if you're into sports series and you haven't given Haikyuu a shot yet, I absolutely highly recommend it. This has been one of the better sports series I've read, and it's a ton of fun. I think you enjoy almost every part of it, especially if you enjoyed Ice Shield 21 and you're kind of looking for another series that like can live up to that in your mind. I think Haikyuu is definitely one to give at least a check out to, because it's a ton of great elements to it to just make for a fantastic series.
Okay. So we do have a couple of manga to talk about. Most of the manga are off of this week. I forget exactly which holiday is going on.
Golden Week, I believe.
Sorry. Golden Week. So as a result of that, there was no Shonen Jump. There was also no Kodansha or anything like that. But fortunately, the Jump Starts still need to catch up. So Shonen Jump put out a special issue on their English website. So we've got two chapters of We Never Learn and one of Dr. Stone to talk about. So we're going to do that. Recap portion of Weekly Manga Recap. Stone first. It is chapter something. I don't know. Oh, well. Z8, raise the smoke signal. So, last time, our heroes had discovered some hot springs, which Senku was happy about because that means that he can, you know, get his shells and stuff and make gunpowder. And meanwhile, Taiju and Yuzuriha are still, like, just chilling in the hot springs. Yuzuriha, Taiju was kind of in the middle of saying something really important to me when this cataclysmic event happened. So she just flat out says, hey, what were you going to say back then? And Taiju says, you know, for a really long time, the only thing keeping me going when I was frozen was having that thing to say to you. But now that we're trapped in this strange world, if I say what I wanted to say, that would make me the biggest coward ever. And, it's actually really cool of him, I feel. Because, you know, yeah, if he just, like, was like, hey, I love you and stuff, like, repopulate the Earth, like, that really wouldn't be the same thing as if he confessed to her while they were just, you know, two ordinary people in high school. So, it's cool of him to realize that the dynamic has changed and so pick up where they left off. They should address this at a different point. And it's also a smart way of course, ducking, hey, we've got these two love interests who we're not going to hook up until much later, probably at the very end of the story, so.
Unless she gets killed by a volcano in the next chapter, Nick.
Yeah, volcano.
That's my
evil volcano.
That's my prediction. Yeah, it's like Ego to Living Planet, but just a volcano. You know, I don't want to talk about too much about Guardians of the Galaxy, Nick. I did see it. I just want to say, I feel like Marvel at this point needs to just make a career out of taking actors we used to love and just making them look like we went back in time for a while. Like, they just like, all right, they're like, all right, let's get Sylvester Stallone, Arnold Schwarzenegger, let's get Kim Basinger, let's just any actor who's old now, put them in a movie and they use their technology to de-age them. Cause there's like the first shot, like the first scene of Guardians of the Galaxy is Kurt Russell driving around looking like he's fucking like 30 again. You're like, God damn it, this technology is too good. Stop it.
They actually already did that with Arnold for Terminator Genesis.
Yeah, but that sucked.
He did not. All right? He did not look good.
Yeah,
that movie is awful, but I love it. Anyway, there's such a weird feeling. Sorry, Bar. There's such a weird feeling watching that movie because, like, I saw it with my family who are, you know, also all nerds, and they're all more into the Doctor Who than I am. But Matt Smith, you know, shows up right at the beginning. And he's in disguise amongst the rebels, and it's weird because it's like, hey, is that Matt Smith in the background? Yeah, that's Matt Smith in the background. Why does he keep staring at the camera like he wants to kill it? And then he turns out to be the freaking Terminator assassin to infiltrate the group in order to stop them. It's like, oh, okay. It all makes sense now.
Yeah, this is all starting to come together.
Matt's just the villain, which makes far more sense than just some random guy with no lines glaring at the camera from the background.
Have they ever, has everybody confirmed or not if it actually is Daniel Craig that's that one stormtrooper in The Force Awakens?
I don't know, actually. So.
I kept hearing like on and I assume it is, but it's still one of those things I keep hearing the on and off. I like to just assume, because that's actually a part of Guardians of the Galaxy. I won't spoil anything to it. But there are a shit ton of very small cameos in the same way like Nathan Fillion was just a random thug in the prison in the first one. There's a shit ton of those in Guardians 2. And some of the people they have in those were just like, holy shit, I can't believe technically this person is now part of the Marvel canon universe.
Oh, boy. So, Taiju recaps the plot of the story so far for Yuzuriha's benefit so that she's all caught up on what they're up to. And then Senku comes along and he's like, and now we have the three ingredients for gunpowder, so we're going to combine them. It's time for our gunpowder cooking class. And there's like this gravity, like, Senku's kitchen. Like, there's like this freaking kitchen background where Yuzuriha's helping them prepare stuff. And they're like dumping stuff in a bag. It's like, it's such a weirdly goofy thing. And he makes this weird Pip Boy. He makes this kind of Pip Boy face while he's like, and now we've got this potassium nitrate.
I like the idea that we just got Shokugeki no Senku essentially for a little bit here.
But yeah.
The explosion goes off and all of Yuzuriha's clothes explode off too. Thanks, the gunpowder, so cool, so kawaii, so Nakama.
Wait, what? Anyway, they go about smashing rocks together in order to do stuff, and Taiju's like, I'll do this! And he gets this huge freaking boulder, and even Yuzuriha's like, "That if you do this, you're going to make things explode really badly." Senku's like, no, actually, it'll be fine. You know, you can't produce sparks from striking a rock against rock. You see, a piece of flint isn't just ordinary stone. Unless there's iron in the mix, there won't be sparks. And then he's like, oh wait, there is iron in this. And sure enough, he freaking spark goes off, ignites the gunpowder while everyone makes goofy faces, and there's an explosion.
Yeah. Hooray! It's like that moment, like, you're watching, like, a Looney Tunes cartoon for a moment when you realize, like, Wile E. Coyote looks at the stick of dynamite and realizes the fuse is going down. He's just like, uh-oh. I'm like, wait, won't all you guys die? I mean, I guess it wasn't that big of, like, a powder thing there, but...
The face Yuzuriha in particular is making, just like...
I do love the reactions these characters have, though.
Oh, great faces on so much of this chapter. He goes off. Of course, everyone manages to get far enough away from it that they're fine. Everyone is mostly unharmed. And weirdly enough, Yuzuriha is like, I was kind of thinking that the explosion would be more like this. And she's got this kind of like thought bubble of like, you know, Taiju just kind of covered in gunpowder for a second. Or I guess Shishio. Senku's like, we don't want to blow him up. We want to make a fucking gun. And they're like, what? So we're going to like actually kill him? No, we won't do that. We'll use it to hold him, you know, hostage until he's actually willing to like bargain with us. You know, we'll convince him that there's no point pursuing this and then force him to stop that way. Which is better because it's like, okay, we kind of had that thought a few weeks ago, which was like, oh, we're going to murder this man in cold blood. But now, makes more sense this way.
Yeah, like we're not actually going to actively try to kill him, but we're going to use this to deter him. Basically, this is our only way to do diplomacy at this point.
Aggressive negotiations. Shishio is onto this, and so he's like, all right, if Senku's at the point where he's already made the gunpowder, then I'll have no choice. And Senku's like, if Tsukasa refuses to talk with us, we'll have no choice. We'll have to kill them. And this awesome full-page spread, you know, split panel of them having the same thought at the same time, as if they're squaring off for like a freaking Ultimate Fight poster or something. I've been getting the impression recently, and I don't know how you feel about this, but I had been... The Taiju was, like, the protagonist, but the more and more that we've gone along, it sort of feels like Senku's actually the protagonist.
I can definitely see that. I think the relationship between them is certainly going to be, though, very much like Haruma and Senna was, where Senku is Haruma in this, obviously. There's definitely going to be moments where Senku feels honestly more important to everything because he's the one with the plans. He's the one who's coming up with everything. But Taiju's specialty is shonen. He is so pure-hearted and with boundless effort that he will accomplish even the seemingly impossible. That, to me, feels like the Shonen Jump kind of lead. So I feel like Senku gets more of these moments because he's the one who's actually coming up actively with the plans. He's the one putting things into motion. But just like how Haruma kind of put a lot of faith in Senna, Senku puts that faith into Taiju, and I think that's kind of where the handoff and responsibility of main character, quote-unquote, kind of goes. But I do see what you mean. Senku does feel like he has the more important role in all of this right now.
So, yeah, I get what you mean. And also, Taiju's kind of got the human motivation. You know, he's protect this girl who's important to him, whereas Senku's got this, like, I'm going to reestablish human society!
Yeah. He's like, I can't wait till Doraemon comes back.
Such a weird thing. Because Yuzuriha at this moment notices that there is a smoke signal going off in the distance. And Senku's like, oh, this is a reaction to the explosion. So somebody saw this and deliberately is signaling us back. So that means that aside from Tsukasa and the three of us, there are other people who have been released from the stone. So there are other people here. Big development, and they're left with this choice of, hey, but if we do, Sagasu's going to head right towards us. So do we, you know, hide and play it smart, or do we signal these people back? And Senku takes a moment to think about it, and he's like, we should light it, and we should signal them. And I'm glad that we're getting to this. I would have been okay with them kind of going along with it just being these four characters for a little bit longer, but it's nice that we're not going to be limiting the cast or have to go through the process of let's release this person from Stone next.
Yeah, excuse me. Sorry.
I will not.
My apologies. No, I apologize. I know it can't be. I always hate to listen to it. So, but no, I just want to know, I am, you know, there's still a lot to kind of look into of what does this actually mean? Is there another society? Is this one other person? But it is exciting to see, like, oh, hey, like, this series is going to keep expanding. More characters are going to come in. Like, I feel like that's what's going to keep making the series exciting is, you know, we introduced more elements into this. We're kind of slowly approaching what I imagine is going to be, I don't know if it's the climax of this thing with, the primate guy whose name I've already forgotten for some reason.
Tsukasa.
Tsukasa, that's it. I wanted to call him Tsukushima. Because Tsukushima just feels like the name you give assholes. I don't know what Tsukushima is, like, in Japanese. I don't know if it's, like, the Jeff of Japanese, where like, oh, fucking Jeff, what an asshole. Look at that guy over there.
But I'm trying to decide if it's funnier if he's tall volleyball asshole or if he's memory wiping asshole.
I'm trying to think. I'm like, is there a Tsukushima that I've met in anything who hasn't been a supreme dickhead? And I don't know if I have or not yet. But just the notion of, like, hey, this is going to be, like, you know, something exciting to kind of see where this grows to. But if this thing with Tsukasa, how much longer it's essentially going to keep going, I feel like we're kind of reaching the end of that. So it's nice to have, like, the building block in there of something to go from there as well. And it also will help to also, if we reach the point where, like, new characters come in, that all the super special awesome characters don't happen to all be from the same fucking school that they went to.
That's true.
Like, oh, wow. It's like...
I don't think that Tsukasa was at their school. I think that he was, like, from a neighboring school, though.
But he was nearby. It was like that same thing I had with Ice Shield, though, where it's like, oh, wait, the guy who's the fastest runner, the guy who's the strongest lifter, the guy with, like, the other fastest speed, the guy who had the fastest throw, the tallest player, like, all these dudes just happened to all be in the same prefecture, essentially, in Japan, like, the same half of the nation.
They're from the major Tokyo area. That's different. There's millions of people that live there.
It is still that extent of, like, all these dudes were from the same area of Tokyo.
It's not nearly as big a problem as this impossibly intelligent teenager and this impossibly, stamina freak and this impossible kills the lions with his bare hands have to live down the street from each other.
So, that's your point. Yeah.
We've been referencing I Shield 21 this episode.
Yeah, well, I mean, the first series was this great sports series.
We really got Hiena sports series.
If I start making a lot of comparisons to it during We Never Learned, then we have a problem.
I never knew that you thought about Mamoru and Suzuna that way, Chris.
I'm just saying, if Suzuna wore a swimsuit and, like, fucking snapped her swimsuit wedgie away a little bit more, maybe she'd have been a more popular character. That's all I'm saying.
We've got two chapters that We Never Learned. One of them is an Iruka chapter, and one of them is an Ogata chapter. I don't know how much of the episode from last week you listened to. I ended up interrogating, taking over which was his best girl from this series.
Okay.
And we both agreed, like, it's Ogata. She's the most fun.
Which one's that? Thumbelina?
She's the glasses girl.
Okay.
Yeah, Thumbelina.
Yeah, Thumbelina. You and Tekken.
He was like, I like girls with short hair and glasses. And I was like, I just think she's funny.
You and Tekken have good taste.
Someone made a comment when we posted it to YouTube that was like, I like how Nick's best girl is the Nick of that series. Like,
I mean, yeah, you are.
Because she's got glasses. Or because she's got glasses and she's grumpy, I guess.
Yeah, Nick, I mean, come on. Do you think you're more like Fumino or Uraka? Uruka?
I hope I'm not more like Uruka.
There you go, Nick. Then you're the fucking Rizu of the group.
Why can't I be the Yuiga, though?
Because you're not Osamu, Nick. We've already proven I'm Osamu, so I am in turn in the Yuga. And maybe we're going to date. Who knows, Nick?
So, Iruka, this chapter is up first. She discovers that she's got to pass this English vocabulary test or else she's not going to be able to go to swing practice. So, of course, she goes to Yuiga's group for help. There's something going on that I really don't understand, because Rizu is doing something because they're all eating lunch together, and there's a couple of gags that are going on while it's happening. One of them is that, is she memorizing flashcards?
Which part are we looking at? This is the first chapter, right?
Yeah, so in like pages 2 and 3, Ogata is talking to herself, saying like Rabita, Rabko, Rabibi, Nanja, Monja, while flipping cards over. The fuck is that?
Oh, well, they note that she has to learn English words, and I imagine that it's probably, like...
I guess she must be looking at English words and saying the Japanese equivalent.
Yeah, I think she's doing that, but it's, like, the only way you could... You can't... Because we are actually speaking English, like, where it's, this is the right. English translation, there's no way you could properly portray that without, I guess, presumably putting in the Japanese version. That's what I'm assuming, but I could be entirely wrong on that.
There's also another running gag going along, which is that at various points in the conversation, which lasts over the course of like four pages, Yuga is constantly drinking from his glass. And even like when he makes this big thing, he's like, you've just got to put in the effort. They're like, why do you keep on? How many of those have you drunk? It's like, well, and they point out, oh, it's because it's free refills and he's poor.
I know that feeling. Sometimes you go in with an old cup and just hope they don't ask questions.
Uruka is like, vocabulary is hard. And Ogata is like, just study.
Actually, hold on, Nick. I know this is really off topic and a tangent to something we've already moved past, but that just brought up like a thing I have to bring up. Do you remember on Comedy Central, they aired a very short-run series. I can't remember its exact name, but it was essentially a show about a guy who taught you how to do cons. He essentially taught you how to, like, it was to grift people. And, like, one of the things he did was that, like, he's like, all right, we're going to basically trick this barbershop place to give me, like, we're going to pretend I'm a reality show about, like, taking some schlummy-looking dude and making him look good, and we're going to use this haircutting place to make it look nice, and like, essentially, I'm gonna get a free haircut out of this. And that was like the main topic of an episode, but there'd be small intercut segments in between that they do like small things. One of the small ones he did that I remember, he's like, sometimes you go to a fast food restaurant, you shouldn't be paying for drinks. Just keep an old cup container from each restaurant you've been to in your trunk. And then when you go to the restaurant, take that cup out of your trunk, go inside, you can just get free refills. And I'm like, what a weird, like, is this really what somebody who's watching this show and has that much time to do is going to be like, let me save myself $2 by keeping this old fucking Hardee's cup in my trunk forever.
Disgusting.
I distinctly remember that.
Just make sure you've got a reusable cup, like a freaking plastic one that you can wash.
I'm pretty sure the show was canceled because they're like, we actually didn't realize at the time we're essentially telling people how to perpetuate crimes, so yeah. This is illegal. And it very quietly left the air after that.
But yeah.
But I love that was like the practical lessons he gave of like, you could just go into a place with an old cup for the trash and get free refills.
God, that's gross.
All right, carry on.
Catch something doing that shit. Jesus Christ.
I'm not going to catch anything, Nick. I'm in perfect health.
Uruka, of course, is a fucking dunce. She's gotten a 0 on her practice test, and then she's like, I'm sure you guys have been doing just as bad. And Ogata's like, I got a 68. Like, oh, I thought you were awful. It was like, well, you know, vocabulary alone, I'm okay. What about you, Fumino? She's got a freaking 100. Also, how dismissive Ogata continues to be with Uruka, because, you know, she holds up her 0 and immediately Ogata's like, too bad about swim practice. Bye. So, Uruka, of course, is determined, like, we will practice. You will write them over and over till your hand learns them. You'll say the word and its translation over and over. Let your ears learn the sound. And then check the pronunciation tools for the correct pronunciation. Uruka's like, that sounds like hard work.
Yeah, so
Fumino's like trying to.
I mentioned before that I feel like a good part of the ability to enjoy this series is going to be based on how annoying this character is, because there's a very fine line she struck between being like an amusing amount of energy into the series and just being obnoxiously fucking stupid and like self-entitled, and she's definitely fallen into the latter camp of this recently, where she's just been really annoying with her execution and just kind of like. everyone else in the series seems to be working their hardest, and she seems to want to know a character who just sits there bitching the entire time. And I'm like,
ooh. I don't want to study. I don't want to study. Can we do something fun? Can we do something fun? I don't want to study. Hey, your boobs are really small. Your boobs are really big.
Like, it can work. I get what she means. Because, look, I'm ADD. I know what it's like to have difficulty studying because your mind's like, let's just do anything else. You haven't finished Apollo Justice yet, even though you played two more of the fucking Phoenix Wright series after that. And I'm like, you're right. I should go back and finish that. But, like, it's just that notion where she just doesn't come off as likable in this way, but her personality is so big that you can't ignore it. You can't, like, just, like, put her in the background in this because she's just...
I'll be your lightning rod of hate.
Yeah.
So Fumino is also trying to encourage Ruka. She's like, hey, we'll help out too. Come on, you can do this. And Ruka's like, oh, thanks. Oh, wow, looking up at her up close. She's stunning. Silky hair, beautiful skin, long eyelashes, and she's so sweet you just want to protect her. She even smells amazing. She's my idea of the perfect girl. Is Iruka bi? Like, I'm legit asking this. Is she supposed to just be, like, so, like, no personal space, and that's just for the sake of it? Or is she supposed to be potentially bi or pansexual? Because she seems to really enjoy pointing out boob sizes, groping boobs, tugging off Ogata's clothes later in the chapter. She seems to be just as into that as she is into getting Yuiga's attention.
I mean,
like,
look.
She enjoys it in different ways, but she seems to be really into it.
I'd be more than happy if that turned out to be the case. I think that would be a nice step in representation, particularly in a harem manga, which usually only focuses on the one kind of, like, sexuality. But I feel more confident in saying she's probably just there to be a vehicle of fan service, and no, she just likes boobs and being sexually harassing as a female character, which in some...
Hey, maybe Yuiga will fall in love with one of the girls, and then the other will fall in love with Iruka, and they'll all be happy. And that'd be nice.
You do bring up the idea, though, where it's like, I do feel like that would be an interesting notion of, like, a harem series wherein one of the characters is bisexual, and, you know, as the series starts to move towards the one true pairing... You know, within that harem, then, like, a second relationship then develops. It'd be kind of a unique way of kind of placing things. I guess it kind of becomes a different series at that point. Maybe it was like a love triangle, but yeah, no. You add an element onto her that would make her far more interesting than she probably is going to end up being. Like, the next chapter, she's going to be like, there's a contest at school to who could have the biggest swimsuit wedgie before they pick it out. I'm going to win. But all you girls are going to force you to be my competition. You have to drive me to the next level. It's going to be like Haikyuu and trying to, like, make a block gets past the other blockers. She's just going to be giving the other girls, like, the hardest wedgie she can. She's like, you have to bring me to my next level.
So they spend time trying to help her study. It's been 5 hours trying to help her study. And she's just like, I can't do this. I want someone to go. It's just like, will you quit saying that every 5 minutes? How the hell have all these people stuck with her that long straight?
I'd be so irritated if this was the character who showed up in my study group. I'd be like, look, not for nothing. I get it, your friends. It's like, you just shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up. You help me in no way. I don't need to learn to be a better swimmer. Like...
I don't. It has nothing to do with what I want to
be. It's not like in the other two relationship where it's like an actual fact of the fact that they're both basically super skilled at what the other one wants to be good at, that them being together in the same study group is actually beneficial in its own way, even if, you know, Yuiga needs to be essentially the in-between that makes it, like, digestible for them to understand. There's still the notion that they could help each other. With this,
well,
it's
also,
like,
they actually care about what they're doing. They don't want to give up on what they're doing. Uh-huh. Whereas Iruka is just like, I get to be near Yuiga, so it's cool. Okay. She doesn't care about her freaking grades at all.
Yeah, she just doesn't want to not have to be able to swim anymore, essentially.
So the others are freaking torturing themselves over this. They do the joke with Fumina's soul trying to leave her body. She's so miserable. And then she's like, what if you could try and teach me how to enjoy English more? And Yuiga's like, I don't know. But he says, look, doing something you're not naturally good at, yeah, it sucks working at getting better. It's hard.
and it only really starts to become enjoyable when you start to get the hang of it. But you know what? You were the same way with swimming too, weren't you? You hated losing, and you didn't really start enjoying yourself until you started actually getting better because you worked hard at it and you suffered. And Uruk is like, you remembered all that stuff? And Duke is like, yeah, I know what a shallow person you are. So, what a generally miserable person Uruk is.
I don't want to come down too crazy hard. It's just this one chapter. Cause it's not like it's the first time. Wasn't there another chapter, like right before this, where she did the same thing about bitching essentially throughout, like having to study at a table with everybody else? Like, oh, I want to swim. It's like, look, is this what she's going to be like every time?
So they do come up with a good solution, which is, okay, here, let's do this diving practice thing. You'll dive under the water, we'll say the English word, you'll dive under, and you'll get the ball that's got the Japanese translation on it. And she starts to enjoy herself, and she starts to get more into it. And of course, because she's in her swimsuit, there's plenty of fan service shots.
They don't have
They're really weird vocabulary words, too. You know, like, climate.
There's not one single wedgie picking shot, though. I feel like there's a big issue with this chapter.
Yeah. Also, week, there's no pencil sharpener on there. What the hell?
Yeah, how am I going to know what Sakapuntis is?
She's like, all right, yeah, she studies some more, she gets into it, and then she's like, hey, we should swim while we're here. And she tugs off Agata's jacket. She's like, no, stop it. Blah, 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 blah. And then she's also like, hey, don't tell me you can't swim. And she's like, don't put me at Yuiga's level. I can swim before.
I actually did find that funny, if only because the image of her is so adorably failing. Like, she just, like, she somehow, like, sinks straight neck down and is still flailing, like, trying to look cool in the water as she's just helplessly sunk after, like, a second.
It is really funny. She's like so defiant in this. I was like, I can swim this. There is a moment between Iruka and Yuiga afterwards because she gives him a gift. She's like, hey, this is for, you know, helping me out so much. And he's like, oh, you didn't need to do that. Hey, you know, you should be sure to use it. And she runs off. Time skip. Yuiga's gotten home. It's her freaking used swimsuit. He's like, what the fuck? And it cuts over to her, and she's like, oh my god, what the fuck does he think of me now? At least she has that self-awareness.
Yes.
I can't believe that I made that mistake. What kind of weird fucking pervert does he take me for now, you know?
I do also enjoy that Yuiga isn't, like, a pervert. That, like, he didn't get the swimsuit and his, like, nose starts bleeding or something like that. He just looks at me, he's like, what the fuck am I supposed to do with this? Like, why did you give me a wet swimsuit? Did you want me to do laundry? Is that my gift?
Anyway. And we've also got a second chapter. There's a big midterm that's coming up. And there's kind of this... this decree comes to you guys like, hey, you know, if they don't do well, if they don't have, like, passing grades, then, you know what, things obviously will conclude just haven't been working out, and you should tell them to give up their target schools and move on to something else. And I'd like to go and think about that. And Ogata and Fumino see him coming out of the office. They overhear the conversation going on inside between the principal and their former tutor. Very, like, robot kind of looking woman. Just the way her eyes are drawn. They're like, you know, oh, she is, like, soulless and stuff. And she's like, he should be forced to resign now without waiting for midterms. Is not convincing them to give up their target schools. He is not facing reality. And because she is an attractive-looking woman, I can only assume that this character is going to be making more appearances. She will be more important than Rebecca, Chris.
Well, that's easy, because Rebecca's not an important character next. She's never going to be one.
Not at all. No. I mean, who else needs a fucking label to show up on them when they make a career?
Nick, I'm going to ask you this question. Was Rebecca in this week's chapter of Black Clover? No, she wasn't.
I don't think she was. She might have been in a group shot in the crowd, but she absolutely did not show up with the same here for work, Rebecca.
She wasn't. And you know what? They didn't release a special chapter during Golden Week to include Rebecca in it, so that just proves how she's not.
No, no. That's totally why.
If they'd done it, she'd have been an important character, but they didn't, so she's not.
Absolutely, because that would have meant that Tabata would have made a bonus chapter exclusively for American Jump about a side character.
Exactly.
So, Fumino is trying to put on a good front for Yuga to, you know, show confidence, like, going into their midterms, because he's like, come on, guys, you know, let's do our best for these midterms and stuff. And Fumino's like, yeah, we can do this. And Ogata's just kind of quietly thinking to herself. While things are going on, she's just remembering all the issues that she and Fumino have been through before, where, you know, they're just gotta, like, change the tutor on them after, like, one single setback, and she doesn't want that to happen because she gets along with Yuiga, and she knows that he's actually dedicated to them and stuff. And there is also a conversation going on in the background where he's actually, like, talking to her, but, like, okay, you know, this means this, and it, you know, to have means, like, you know, you can. To have means you possess something, have to means this, and so on. And Ruka's like, oh, you mean like this? And she's like, oh, yeah, that's right. So she's actually freaking learning something for once. So
yeah,
there you go. Time passes, and Ogata invites Yuiga to the udon shop that her family owns. And there's a confrontation between Yuiga and her father, who offers him some udon, and he's like, oh, thank you! There's, like, a single noodle sitting in the bowl. And he's like, and if you think about laying a hand on my precious, adorable Princess Rizupu. I'm sorry, whoever the hell decided that was going to be the pet name that he had for her in the translation team, that's such a ridiculously stupid name that I love it. Ogata, of course, sends her father off and scolds him, starts talking with Yuiga, and, thank God that her, like, shop outfit is, like, not a fan service thing, because they make, like, special note of how it makes her look and stuff. It's like, that guy's not, like, in a pervy way.
Well, it'd be like, more, nah. It'd be far more, inappropriate and weird, too, because that's her family's restaurant. Like, her parents would be the one deciding what that costume is.
If it was, like, a French maid costume. The overprotectiveness that her father is displaying towards her would take on a much different context.
Yeah.
So, Ogata is, like, trying to memorize, essentially, while going over stuff with Yuiga. It's like, okay, in this story, what does this mean? What is this character motivation and stuff? And she's, I will say, going about in a way that I don't think is, like, quite the way that you should always approach, like, English. Obviously, if your class is focusing on a particular book, then yes, it is important to sometimes go on over what is actually going on, the subtext of the scene and stuff, so that you can actually properly analyze it, because high school kids aren't always going to pick up on that kind of shit. But that's not just always the approach you should take to analyzing literature, especially if she's trying to do something to, like, understand the way people think. But whatever. So, she's working really hard, and Yuiga's making a note of how ridiculously motivated that she's being at this point. And at some point, he's like, hey, you know, there's actually a technique, because you're kind of getting sidetracked by some of the details that are going on here. And so he offers an idea for her. We time skip past that and get the explanation later. You know, night has come, and Yuiga's going home, and Ogata catches him by the sleeve like she did in the dark last time. And she says, hey, if I fail my midterm, and she doesn't really finish it, and Yuiga's like, hey, you know, don't worry about it. If that happens, we'll review everything and do better next time, and that's it. And he kind of pats her on the head, and he's like, and she's like, don't treat me like a child. And he's like, sorry, yeah, that was kind of demeaning, wasn't it? Don't fucking pat people on the head, man.
That is a really derogatory way of trying to treat someone. Like, good job, pet. Animal companion.
Now go fetch the ball. Go get the ball. Go get the ball. The day of the midterm comes, Yuiga and Ogata freak out because they realize, oh no, this test only covers half of the material we studied. The rest of it is stuff that we didn't go over.
Ogata starts to panic. She's remembering what the former tutor had said. You've got no talent for language. This amazing gift of yours and you want to use to win at board games. But she remembers the words of encouragement that Yuiga had for her at the end of the night. And then she starts implementing the technique that he gave her, which was to analyze the text and look out for words that are like, you know, in other words or thus. Those are just restatements. So you don't need to worry about those. Cross them out. But if you come across a word that's like, however, nonetheless, that means it's going to be followed by an important point. So that's the point that you need to focus on. And that way you can limit the amount of text that you're actually looking at. You're left with only the important points. That's all you're left to analyze. And that way you don't get caught up on the details. So for her approach to doing stuff, this is actually a really good idea. And it's this big dramatic scene where, you know, she's like dramatically crossing stuff out. And there's a view from like the point of view of like the paper of her slashing the pen down across the page while she's looking down in determination at it. So it's a really cool little moment that honestly took me by surprise that this series actually had that.
Yeah. It's why I've had like kind of faith in this series, because even though it does things that annoy me at certain points, it does seem to play a little bit more into the fan service. I do notice moments of really quality writing to it that kind of give me the optimism that this could be a very intriguing and entertaining series. So these are kind of the reasons why I kind of hold on to it.
And Ogata manages to, well, she gets a passing grade according to she looked at the answer key, I guess, afterwards, because it's like self-grading result. I don't know. But she got 71, which is pretty damn good for her. And Yuiga is so overwhelmed by this that he goes, "For reals?" Which is surprising. Whatever. And so, you know, he's really happy with this, of course. And Ogata is like, "I don't need to tell them I ran out of time doing reductive reading and got lucky in all the bubbles I just filled in randomly." And it's like, oh.
I know that feeling.
That kind of sucks.
Where you get a good grade and you're like, whew, I just managed to guess right a lot.
It does make it really kind of undercut the moment where it's like, oh, this technique that he used with her really works. But no, it didn't actually. She got fucking lucky.
Well, she does note that she ran out of time to do it for the whole test, so it's essentially the other ones in there, but...
So, well, presumably she knew half of the test, and then I guess just lucked out the other half?
Yeah.
And also, it seems like there's another obstacle coming in for the next chapter, because they've got to do their math midterm, and Fumino is sick. Uh-oh.
I wonder what that's like.
Yeah, yeah.
Goodbye.
So, we're all caught up on Jumpstart, except for Robot Laser Beam. Fuck that. And, yeah.
I actually, you know what? I've been trying to give it more and more of a shot. I am able to get into it a little bit more. Unfortunately, it also came at the same time. I've now been catching up on Haikyuu, and Haikyuu kind of hits that taste for sports a little bit better. But I am still reading Robot Laser Beam. It is moving in an interesting direction. They do show that Robot, like, essentially what his character really is in this story, that even though he's exceptionally skilled, he's also kind of too direct in his things, because they make a note how when he gets into rough, he can't get out of it without doing, like, 12 shots, because he just doesn't know how to, like, handle that.
Right.
And how the wind screws up his calculation, so... There are aspects to it that I'm like, I can see where we'd get an interesting story out of this, but it is still a very tough uphill battle to climb. So I'll keep it on my back burner. I'll keep trying to read it and, you know, note what happens, but I still don't think it's going to be something we'll watch the recap quite yet.
So,
I mean, we don't even do a week.
I don't think we should really do a chapter of the week for this, because we only covered two series.
I was like, chapter, but, we'll have that back. Series of the week, Nick, Haikyuu. Haikyuu's fantastic. Go read it.
Favorite character, a character in Haikyuu.
I really dig Okaiwa.
I'm glad that we did finally get to talk about Haikyuu. It's something that I guess we kind of had in our back burner for a long time. just because it's a series that gets a lot of attention.
I'm glad that we're able to talk about it too, because one of the biggest regrets I have with Weekly Manga Recap is that, you know, it happened at a time where we had both already finished Ice Shield 21, and we didn't get to talk about Ice Shield 21 as it was running. I have feelings on Haikyuu that kind of reach that same level. It would be nice to be able to like share those with you in the process of something kind of going on real time, essentially.
Yeah. We haven't really had that sports manga that stuck around in the English version of Jump. We had cross-managed for a while. We've got Robot Laser Beam now, but...
But yeah, just like... I want to be able to like share that and have those moments. Somewhere out there, there's an alternate reality where we did... Like, where we've been doing Weekly Manga Recap long enough, and we got to actually actively talk week to week regarding
the... About how disappointed we were in the international arc.
I was going to say, like, we got to talk week to week about how great that Oju versus Daemon match was. But yeah, you're right. There we probably, most of us, we talk about how disappointed I got.
And what the fuck happened with Karin? She's not even on the international team.
She's done, who cares? Why make a point of her being the only female player in the league? She's not actually important.
Why did you make a big point about how awesome her passes are? You built up that one guy who does the freaking bootleg play and then say, oh, he's only the fourth best quarterback in the team. And then you have Karin and you say she's going to be freaking Hiruma's rival and then she does nothing.
I was like, by the process of her being on Teikoku, she's supposed to be the best quarterback in all of Japan. But yeah, she's not relevant at all afterwards.
Anyway, so that's kind of it for Week Manga Recap, this very different kind of bonus episode of the show.
This is an official episode. This is an official episode, though.
It is an official episode.
And I'm
actually... just been...
Another thing I'm super bummed about... I mean, another thing I'm very bummed about is I was intending at one point to try to put into this episode World Triggered My Heart Backdoor Part. Unfortunately, I did not think I'd be able to speak long enough to do an entire thing of that. And I wanted to make it because it was going to be the special 300th episode version of this. And I wanted to do it so bad because the best stinger to it was at the very end. I was going to be like, by the way, this isn't actually technically episode 300. The episode with you and Tekken was episode 300 of Weekly Manga Recap. But now it's going to be like two episodes later. It's not going to be worth trying to do the joke. So, but hey.
Until this episode goes up on Podbean, we're going to have 316 episodes for a little while, so, yeah.
Yeah, but hey, Nick, great 300 episodes, buddy.
Yeah, it's been fun, and I look forward to the next 300, I guess.
I will give a special shout-out, though, to Dark Might, who is our newest Patreon supporter, so thank you very much to Dark Might. It is greatly appreciated. I'd give you the fist pump, but unfortunately my camera's not on because otherwise you would see me hacking.
I got it for him.
There you go. Thank you, Nick. I appreciate that, good buddy, and I appreciate you, Dark Might, helping us out. It is greatly appreciated. Especially as I start to contemplate having to do like Breaking Bad like scenarios of getting into the world of crime to get anti-inflammatory pills for my throat if need be.
How's that joke go? To give you an idea, there was of how bad the American healthcare system is. There's an incredibly popular incredibly popular TV drama about how a guy has to get into a life of crime because he's got cancer, and nobody questions this.
Well, yeah, I mean that was part of why Vince Gilligan did it. I thought wasn't that part of the point he was trying to make with it? Is that like none of this would have happened if we were in a country with actual healthcare in it?
I don't remember if he said that, but I mean, it wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah.
Anyhow, on that note, we'll see you guys next time. We should be back to a regular Wednesday recording time, so watch out for that. And thank you everybody for joining in to listen to us. We'll see you next time.
Yeah, thank you everybody. It's been a ton of fun doing this. Again, I apologize for my voice. I hope that the coughing and everything like that, I tried to cover some of it up, but I apologize for any that was distracting. But thank you all for coming along, and... I don't have anything funny to go out on, Nick.
It's okay.
I think I'm just going to sit here and die slowly.
All right.
On the ground.
So, a bit difficult. I don't know how the hell we're going to get this recording up. Presumably someone will eventually come along and discover Chris's corpse, and they'll probably, you know, I'm sure that's, you know, his family will be like, oh, sure, Nick, you can have the recording.
Yeah, I'll tattoo put WMR on the internet on my forehead.
Gotta go to a tattoo parlor.
Yeah.
Pay the guy a tattoo, get back, and then dine for new commute.
Yeah, okay. Oh, alright. That's gonna do it, guys.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.